Welcome to Beergasmic's Beer Storian Podcast. This is our first episode, so wish us luck, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the show. Today, we're tapping into something, well, truly ancient, and surprisingly critical to the development of civilization. Beer. Forget just the refreshing taste for a second. We've dug into this fascinating mix of historical and scientific sources showing beer's huge impact on how we've lived, built societies, even made scientific breakthroughs.
Yeah, we're going way beyond just happy hour here. We're digging into how this, you know, simple mix of grains and water has been this quiet, crucial partner in our development. It's touched everything from our earliest rituals right up to the tech we use today.
Exactly. So our mission today, for you listening, is to give you this completely new angle on beer. We want you to walk away really understanding its central role, seeing it as more than just a drink, almost like this liquid thread running through our entire history. Okay, let's get right to it, starting somewhere that might just, well, flip how you think about civilization's origins.
The very earliest evidence we have for brewing is, genuinely startling. Picture this. 13,000 years ago, Rakafet Cave in Israel. The Natufian people, they weren't really full-scale farmers yet.
Not yet, right?
But they were brewing. Archaeologists found these residues in stone mortars, and they think it was linked to ritual feasts honoring the dead.
Wow. So this suggests maybe the desire for a fermented drink, it actually came before widespread agriculture?
That's the implication. It's a total flip on the usual script, isn't it?
Yeah.
Beer potentially before mass bread production.
Yeah, and that leads to this really intriguing idea. Could the search for beer, the desire for it, have actually pushed people towards settling down, cultivating grains more systematically?
There's a team at Stanford that's proposed exactly that, suggesting the social, maybe even the spiritual importance of this early brew gave our nomadic ancestors a really powerful reason to become farmers.
What do you make of that? It sounds almost backward, but it makes a kind of sense.
It's a compelling idea. I mean, think about the effort involved in early farming. Having a strong, maybe ritually important end goal, like a reliable supply of this special drink, that could definitely be a powerful motivator. It suggests, you know, the social and ceremonial stuff was deeply tied to getting the ingredients for brewing.
Okay, and the plot thickens. Fast forward a couple of thousand years to Göbekli Tepe in Turkey about 11,000 years ago. This incredible site, pre-pottery Neolithic, it has these huge stone troughs. And guess what they're coated with?
Beer stone.
Beer stone.
Exactly. It's basically this mineral deposit that builds up from repeated brewing, like lime scale in your kettle, but, you know, ancient and massive.
And the size of these troughs implies brewing on a scale large enough for communal feasts.
That's the thinking. It points to brewing being central to the gatherings that seem to define Göbekli Tepe. This wasn't just a personal drink. It was part of community life.
Right. Which brings us to that quote from an archaeologist about it. Production and consumption of alcoholic beverages is an important factor in feasts facilitating the cohesion of social groups and in organizing collective work, so it wasn't just a party.
No, it might have been the social lubricant, the thing that helped organize people to build these massive early structures.
It hints at beer being almost like a social currency back then, fostering teamwork, building bonds for these huge projects.
Precisely. Seeing these early examples, it's clear beer was being woven right into the fabric of these emerging societies from the get-go.
Absolutely fascinating. Okay, let's journey now to Mesopotamia, the cradle of civilization. Here we meet Ninkasi,
the Sumerian goddess of beer.
But it's not just that they had a beer goddess. They left us this 3,800-year-old hymn to her. That's also recipe.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it? Putting brewing on a divine level with its own goddess and a detailed hymn recipe just underlines how central beer was to their life, their beliefs.
And then there's the Epic of Gilgamesh, another incredibly old, influential story.
Right, Enkidu, the wild man. He becomes civilized through bread and beer.
Yeah, the text says he ate until he was full, drank 7 pitchers of beer. His heart grew light, his face glowed, and he sang out with joy. It's so vivid. Beer linked to happiness joining society almost 4,000 years ago. Not just food, but culture.
Exactly. That explicit link between beer and becoming civilized is key. It suggests beer was seen as crucial for moving from, well, a wilder state to a settled social life. And Mesopotamian beer wasn't light stuff. It was thick, nutritious, almost a food often drunk with straws, right?
Yeah, to filter out the bits of grain. Okay, moving to ancient Egypt around 3000 BC, the scale of brewing there is just mind-boggling. Abydos, that recent discovery, a 5,000-year-old brewery complex.
Capably producing something like 5,900 gallons per batch. That's industrial scale for the top.
What was driving that massive output?
Well, that scale dating back to King Narmer's reign. It strongly suggests a state-organized effort, probably to supply beer for royal rituals, temple offerings. Yeah. It shows how beer was tied up with religious and political power in Egypt.
And like, in Mesopotamia, it was vital for daily life too, right? For the living and the dead.
Absolutely. Common tomb offerings, tributes to gods, and crucially, it was payment sustenance for laborers.
The pyramid builders at Giza, the stories say they got about 1 1/3 gallons daily as part of their wages. Think about organizing that.
It's a huge amount. But remember, Nile water wasn't always safe. Beer gave hydration, calories, some nutrients. It was vital and safer than possibly contaminated water.
Okay, let's jump east now to China. Earliest chemical evidence of beer there is what, 3,400 to 2,900 BC at the Maji site?
And interestingly, it wasn't a simple brew. It was complex. Millet, barley, Job's tears, tubers.
What's really striking about that recipe?
The barley. It wasn't a staple crop in China then. So its presence suggests it was likely imported just for brewing centuries before it became common food. Again, pointing to beer's high social, maybe ritual value.
And across the Pacific, in the Americas, different ingredients, same idea.
For sure. The Inca and others in the Andes brewed chicha from maize, and the Aztecs revered pulque made from fermented agave.
How did they see pulque?
As sacred, consumption was often restricted to religious rites. Offerings used by priests, elders during festivals, sometimes even given to those about to be sacrificed, maybe to ease things or induce a trance.
Wow. So across the globe, people are finding local stuff to ferment and weaving it into their spiritual and social lives. Different ingredients, but a universal impulse.
Exactly.
So we've seen beer deep in ritual and daily life, but how did it influence the bigger picture, the rise of more complex societies?
Well, let's go back to the Fertile Crescent. That constant demand for grain, not just for bread, but for brewing too, likely played a really big role in pushing early agriculture forward. It created this steady need that encouraged more efficient, larger-scale cultivation.
Right. And as farming got better, you start getting surpluses,
right,
grain and beer. And these surpluses, often stored in temples, they become a form of early wealth, a medium of exchange.
Precisely. Redistributed as rations. Think of those Sumerian cities like Uruk, around 3400 BC. We have actual clay tablets, basically pay stubs showing workers' daily quotas of bread and beer.
As payment for labor.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a one-off. This system lasted. We see similar records in Egypt, beer payments for workers on those massive building projects.
So beer was quite literally an early form of currency. Fueling big projects, tying people into organized economies. It wasn't just a drink after work, it was how they got paid and fed.
And that also brings up the importance of communal drinking. Imagine early taverns or just shared feasts where beer flowed. These events were probably vital social glue for these new communities. Sharing a drink builds bonds, right?
Makes total sense. Eases tensions, celebrates alliances, marks seasons. It solidifies community. So from the very first brews to these ancient breweries, beer wasn't just sitting there. It was actively shaping how societies organize themselves.
Absolutely. And its influence didn't stop there. Beer also became the surprising catalyst for major scientific and technological leaps throughout history.
This is where it gets really interesting. Think about early brewing, mostly trial and error, right?
Right. But in that experimentation, brewers were basically doing early applied science, learning through observation about malting, fermentation, even managing yeast centuries before they knew what yeast was.
Like those medieval European brewers reusing sediment.
Exactly. They noticed it sped things up. They were unknowingly selecting and cultivating yeast cultures for consistency. By the 15th century, brewers' guilds even figured out how to dry and store yeast. Pretty amazing for the time.
And speaking of breakthroughs directly linked to beer, the very first enzyme ever identified, diastase.
Found in malt, essential for breaking down starches in brewing. Isolated in 1833 by Payne and Persos.
What was the bigger significance of finding diastole?
Huge. It was a pivotal moment for biochemistry, explained the key brewing step, sure, but also introduced the whole concept of enzymes as biological catalysts. It opened up a new way of understanding biological processes at a molecular level. Far-reaching stuff.
And then there's Louis Pasteur in the 1850s. His work started because the brewing industry wanted to know why beer sometimes went bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that led him to prove groundbreakingly that fermentation is biological, done by living yeast cells.
His work in 1857 was huge, challenging old ideas about spontaneous generation, and his later book, Études sur la bière.
Right, in 1876. That's where he identified bacteria as a cause of sick beer. And his solution, of course,
pasteurization,
which transformed not just brewing, but food safety, medicine, everything.
And we can't forget Emil Hansen at Carlsberg Brewery, 1883. Isolating a pure strain of lager yeast, how big a deal was that?
It revolutionized brewing consistency. Suddenly, brewers had much more control. It meant predictable, stable beer, getting rid of lots of old problems. It was key to the global success of lagers. Plus, the techniques developed for yeast cultivation. They helped advance microbiology in general, like vaccine development, biotech.
Wow. The influence extends to farming, too. The demand for barley, beer's main ingredient, really drove its spread across Europe and pushed farmers to improve cultivation.
Especially monasteries and big estates, they actively selected barley varieties with more starch, specifically for brewing.
And then hops came in.
Yeah. As beer shifted towards hopped ales, maybe 8th to 12th centuries, hop cultivation became a whole new agricultural sector. The overall demand for quality grains pushed things like crop rotation, irrigation, boosting farm productivity overall.
Even laws like Bavaria's famous Reinheitsgebot, the 1516 purity law. It's famous for purity, but it was also about grain management, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. A key part was stopping brewers using wheat so there'd be enough wheat for bread, the main food staple. This shows the political and economic clout of beer and its ingredients.
And another big contribution, often overlooked, public health. For ages, beer was safer than water.
Definitely. Before modern sanitation, water could be deadly. Brewing involves boiling, and fermentation produces alcohol. Both kill pathogens.
So those medieval monasteries giving beer to travelers, it wasn't just hospitality.
It was seen as healthier than dodgy local water. And small beer, that low alcohol
Krantz.
Stuff, was drunk daily all over medieval Europe for hydration and calories, especially by workers.
There's that famous story from the 1854 cholera outbreak in London. John Snow.
Right, the epidemiologist. He noticed brewery workers drinking beer made with their own well water weren't getting sick, while others using the contaminated public pumps were dying.
A crucial piece of evidence for germ theory and showing beer's protective effect right there.
Exactly. And then the Industrial Revolution, brewing scale, pushed technology. 18th century London porter breweries were early adopters of James Watt's steam engine to boost production. And in the 19th century, the rise of lager absolutely spurred the invention of mechanical refrigeration. Carl von Linne, 1870s. That was essential for keeping things cool enough for lager yeast year-round. It's why lager took over the world.
Beer also pushed automated bottle making, development of railways, trucking.
Yeah, to get the beer out there. So, it's clear, from biochemistry to microbiology, farming to industry, beer has been this unexpected driver of science and tech.
Okay, let's pivot back to its impact on societies and politics. We touched on beer as wages.
Right. Those 5,000-year-old Sumerian tablets from Uruk are just crystal clear. Explicit allocations of bread and beer as payment.
And Egypt took it to another level, right? Institutionalized rations.
Especially for the pyramid builders at Giza. Estimates are 4-5 liters a day per person. You see it in their art, their hieroglyphs. It wasn't a perk, it was fundamental compensation.
And not just a bonus, but vital. hydration, calories, nutrition, keeping the workforce going, and tying them directly to the state's production system.
Exactly. And when something's that crucial, regulations follow. Hammurabi's Code, Babylon, about 1750 BC, it has really specific laws about beer parlors, fair prices.
And that harsh penalty for watering down beer? Drowning.
Tells you how seriously they took it, its value as a commodity, maybe worries about public order, fair trade. The code even set daily beer rations based on social class, early industry regulation.
And later, brewers often formed guilds, didn't they?
Yeah, medieval Europe, London, Prague. Guilds protected trade secrets, kept standards up, and worked with authorities on rules and taxes. Beer was big revenue.
Like the ale conners in medieval England, official tasters.
Exactly. Checking quality, fair prices, often for tax purposes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cities regulated mug sizes, opening hours, alcohol content, all about order and revenue.
That German Reinheitsgebot. Again, purity, yes, but also economics. Stopping wheat use in beer kept bread affordable shows beer's political weight.
And taxes on beer and ale were huge income sources later on in the 18th and 19th centuries in Europe and America. It funded infrastructure, wars. Before the prohibition in the U.S., alcohol taxes were a major part of government revenue.
Which explains why prohibition was such an economic shock.
Absolutely. It showed just how big the beer economy was.
Beer also drove trade and connectivity, didn't it? From the start.
Yeah, Sumerians, Egyptians exported know-how, maybe surplus beer. Later, the medieval Hanseatic League traded different beer styles, English stout, German Bock across Europe.
And that trade spread ingredients, like hops.
Exactly. Spread techniques, too. Then European empires took beer worldwide, adapting to local stuff. Corn beer, spruce beer in the colonies, and taverns and colonial cities became hubs for trade, news, ideas.
Speaking of taverns, they were always more than just bars, weren't they? Kind of a third space.
Totally crucial for community life. That Czech proverb, where beer is brewed, life is good. Where beer is drunk, life is even better, captures it well. Taverns were often places for free speech, political debate.
Even planning revolutions.
Think American Revolution. Taverns like the Green Dragon in Boston, meeting places for the Sons of Liberty planning protests against the Stamp Act. Early U.S. Congresses sometimes met in taverns, too.
It wasn't just America, though, right?
No, same patterns in Europe. Town councils met in pubs, guilds held banquets there. London pubs were literary and political hubs. Authorities always knew these places were influential, often tried to control them.
But for regular people, the pub was key for news, community organizing, craft guilds, early unions.
The vital space outside work and home. Of course, beer's prominence also led to pushback, religious rules, social movements.
Like the 19th century temperance movement leading to U.S. prohibition from 1920 to 1933, what were the big impacts of that experiment?
Profound and mostly negative, socio-politically. Thousands of breweries closed, maybe 1,300 down to almost zero legally, massive job losses. Surviving companies like Yuengling and Pabst had to make ice cream or cheese.
And the biggest unintended consequence.
The massive rise of organized crime. Al Capone, others. The black market for illegal booze was incredibly lucrative. Speakeasies popped up everywhere.
So prohibition basically showed that banning it didn't work as well as regulating it.
That was the hard lesson learned. Regulation and taxation seemed more effective. After repeal, you got this more symbiotic relationship between brewers and government taxes and rules.
And the rise of the huge national, then global breweries in the mid-20th century. Guinness, Heineken, Budweiser, Asahi. Cultural and economic giants.
Yeah, but beer's always had that dual role, hasn't it? Social glue, but also something societies feel they need to manage because of its power.
Absolutely. Which brings us pretty much up to the modern era and how beer keeps evolving.
Right. So European colonial expansion really spread brewing globally. They brought their methods, but often had to adapt.
Using local ingredients,
exactly.
Right?
Colonial America saw pumpkin beer, molasses beer, spruce tip ale, corn ales. Settlers also introduced barley and hops to new places.
And the famous IPA story, India Pale Ale,
developed specifically to survive the long sea trip to India. Extra hops, higher alcohol acted as preservatives. Then later, German immigrants made lager brewing huge in North America and Australia. By the 20th century, European styles mostly dominated worldwide.
And industrialization turbocharged everything. Thermometers, hydrometers brought consistency. Steam engines allowed massive scale.
Like Whitbread in 18th century London. But the real game changer for modern beer was mechanical refrigeration in the late 19th century.
Carl von Lindigen made year-round lager possible anywhere. Key companies in lager's global takeover were Pilsner Urquell and Budweiser.
Plus, pasteurization for bottled beer meant wider distribution, longer life. Late Victorian breweries like Guinness were immense. This led to huge global companies, and for a while, a trend towards lighter, paler lagers dominating.
But that dominance and industrial scale also fueled the temperance backlash and prohibition, as we said, leading to industry consolidation afterward.
Until the late 20th century, when things started to change again with the craft beer movement. A rediscovery, really, of lost diversity, a reaction against mass production.
Started maybe with Camra in the UK in 1971, campaigning for traditional ales.
Arguably, yes. Then it really took off in the US in the 80s, pioneering microbreweries like Anchor, Sierra Nevada.
And the growth since the 2010s has just been explosive. Huge diversity, focus on local community brewing, brew pubs, tap rooms are back as social hubs.
And it's global now. Vibrant craft scenes everywhere. Europe, Brazil, Japan, New Zealand. In 2016, UNESCO even recognized Belgian beer culture as intangible cultural heritage. Shows its enduring cultural weight.
So today's beer world is this mix. Huge multinationals alongside thousands of small independent brewers. It's a massive global industry economically.
Over $800 billion in GDP contribution, something like that. And socially, still that lubricant at sports events, festivals, and barbecues.
And we're seeing new trends too, right? Sustainability, non-alcoholic or low ALC options becoming popular, brewing used for economic development.
It just keeps adapting. Even after, what, 10,000 plus years? Beer keeps evolving with us.
So, wrapping this up, it's quite a journey, isn't it? From ancient rituals to today's craft scene, it's clear this simple drink has been tangled up with human civilization for millennia, impacting farming, cities, religion, science, law, community, everything.
It really has. And considering that incredible history of adaptation and influence, it leaves us with a final thought for you listening. As our societies keep changing, what new roles might this ancient, ever-present drink play in the future? Definitely something to ponder next time you raise a glass.
Thanks for diving deep with us into the surprisingly influential history of beer. If you learned something new today, please consider giving us a 5-star review. If you want to see all the sources we used to develop this episode, please head over to beergasmic.com/podcast.
Also, be sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.